Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilick, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is your host, Evan Basilick. I'm here with fellow hosters, Sajit and Cynthia, and we actually have our guest is a hoster as well. We'll be talking to Chris Reddington from Cloud with Chris about GitHub Actions in just a few minutes. But before we get to that, Cynthia, Sajit, you guys had some news that you put out there.
I do. And I didn't know hoster was a word. Today I learned, like, hello, we are fellow hosters.
Fellow podcasters, hosters, you know.
I know we missed this. This is episode 373, because I also missed it last week. And Suji told me about it.
Oh, yeah. And today is April 15th as well. See, you know, we just get lazy with the intro.
But there are two updates I wanted to share. The first one is Azure Storage Day, which will occur on the 29th of April from 9 to 12:30 Pacific time. And we'll put in the show notes on some of the information on why you should join. The first and foremost, definitely because we're announcing a lot of new things and you get to learn about different trends from our experts. You're going to see a number of different demos of seeing how to use different storage solutions in action, how it applies to your enterprise workloads, get answers to your questions if you have any burning questions. And last but not least, you'll be also learning about best practices, what you should think when you are migrating some of your application and when you want to modernize them. So that is one. The other one we also announced is that you can now build secure manufacturing operations with nesting capabilities for Azure IoT Edge. Why this is so significant is because in the past, like, a lot of companies want to leverage the capabilities of IoT, leveraging like AI at the edge. But what they're running into is that they need these devices to be isolated and cannot talk directly to the internet. But with this new announcement, there's ways to kind of isolate them while you can take advantage of all the things that Azure or a cloud offers. And that is all for me. Go ahead.
I was just on that manufacturing one. That's super cool because, you know, I came out of the manufacturing world many, many, many years ago. And the amount of data that world collects and the amount of automation, and I'm going to call it dumb automation just because it sort of has not caught up with modern times, but like the number of programmable logical controllers and all that stuff that are out there, and it's a really slow moving industry sort of as a whole from a technology perspective, because they're talking these physical devices, right? It's not just upgrade the software, it's upgrade the device, upgrade the hardware. Like this is great to be able to give them capabilities in that. I can't imagine the number of devices that are out there that have this need. It's got to be even way more than when we think about traditional edge scenarios.
Yep, I had put one in there, Evan, and that's I was looking at all the updates from this past week, and we had a number of small updates, I should say, but this one caught my eye, and the title said "A Functions Upgrade in Azure Monitor Log Analytics," and I was like, wait, what has functions got to do with log analytics, right? I'm thinking Azure Functions, of course, like we all do these days. But we all forget that functions has been a traditional programming construct for forever. It's just a method call. It's a way of wrapping up some reusable piece of code. And that's what functions means within the scope of log analytics. If you write a query, you could wrap that up as a function, put it up on the side. And now the nice thing is it's easily discoverable. You can have it up on the sidebar.
Oh,
you
know, that you kind see of function. All your things.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you write a function, let's say, and then, you know, I can reuse it. Maybe it's a function to query our podcast data, for example, or something like that. So what they've done is they've made it more discoverable by putting it up on that sidebar there. And they've also added a whole bunch of new solution-based functions, which are pre-built into log analytics. and also workspace functions, you know, that have some common parameters. Maybe, you know, you want to expose, there's some common, maybe the subscription ID, et cetera, is the same because we're all working the same workspace. So you can kind of, you know, encapsulate some of that in your function. So a whole bunch of updates on functions, and I'm going to take a look at this myself because I think this is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that is cool.
That's it for me, Evan.
Yeah, the only other one I wanted to call it, and I thought this was, you know, given the world that a lot of us find ourselves living in, you know, I thought this last one was really cool. So, you know, we've got this concept of, you know, Windows Virtual Desktop, you know, VDI in the cloud. But the problem is, right, with that, you've got a human being that may or may not have this schedule, right, that we have when we talk about server workloads and not. And so the problem with those workloads is that they don't always know when to turn these machines on, right? I've worked with some customers, they say, hey, we turn them on at 8, or we, you know, analyze the data from, you know, our folks, and we know when our people start to come online. Well, now we've, in preview, we've turned on this feature that when you try and connect to it through the Windows Virtual Desktop client, it will start the VM as you do that connect, right? We sort of made those two one steps. Now, you can't use the traditional RDP connector. You have to use the modern upgraded one, but, and it will take a little bit of time to start it, right? But if, you know, that's a really big COGS savings, right, for customers. At that point, because they literally will just turn these things on demand at that point. So nice, cool feature there. Well, cool. Great. No, that's a nice roundup from the news. So at this point, I think we'd probably want to introduce our guests. You know, so we've got Chris Reddington from the Cloud with Chris podcast, a podcast that talks about DevOps, cloud architecture, and cloud development concepts. And Chris and I actually used to work in the same organization in Microsoft. Ran into each other after, and we thought it'd be a great chance to come and talk to him. And he wanted to decide to chat about GitHub Actions. So, Chris, maybe introduce yourself. Tell us what you do for Microsoft these days. And then let's understand what this GitHub Actions thing is.
Sure, absolutely. And thanks for the intro, and thank you for having me on the show. Appreciate it. So, Chris Reddington, as you just mentioned, we were previously in the same part of Microsoft as each other. So I was previously in the Fast Track for Azure team, so helping our customers onboard onto Azure, make sure they have a great experience as they, you know, start their journey in most cases, or maybe a new project. And after 4 years being in that team, I thought it was time for a change, something a bit different. Not too different, though. So I'm now a cloud solution architect. Rather than focusing across Europe as a region, I'm now really focused on UK customers. And interestingly, what you were talking about in the beginning, manufacturing and resources is my kind of industry where I focus on. You know, the IoT
things. We should have left that one to you.
Well, it's interesting because as you were talking about those, I've actually, maybe we'll come onto it a bit later, but all of the Azure updates and things that come out, I have some automation so I can keep tracking them and post them out on my podcast channels and things. And all of those are going tick, yep, seen that. And there's been a lot the past few days. But yeah, like I say, you know, still very much in that customer journey, customer onboarding, and deepening some more of the relationships now in manufacturing and resources. And it's, yeah, it's fun getting to really dive in and explore some concepts there.
Yeah, cool. No, yeah, definitely great. Thanks for coming on. You know, so to talk about GitHub, right? So we, you know, we've invested a bunch in GitHub over the last few years, right? Sort of make it better with the cloud. But this, you know, GitHub Actions, what would I ever use them for? Like, where would I tend to see them used?
Yeah, sure. And I guess a lot of people listening to this might be coming from the Azure DevOps kind of world, so thinking about Azure pipelines. So maybe let's start there. And even with Git and GitHub, because sometimes when I'm speaking with customers and GitHub comes up, they're like, oh, yeah, we're using GitHub on Azure DevOps, and having to detach those two concepts of Git and GitHub. So for anyone listening in who maybe doesn't have that development background, Azure DevOps, GitHub, they're both different platforms where you can go ahead and really manage your end-to-end development lifecycle, whether that's your planning, your code, all the way through to building and deploying into some kind of software deliverable. And in the Azure DevOps world, the build and release aspects would be known as Azure pipelines commonly. And from a GitHub perspective, you have this thing called GitHub Actions. Now, the reason I pause slightly there is GitHub Actions doesn't just focus on this kind of continuous integration and continuous delivery concept. It does more than that. So there are lots of events that you can kind of hook into from a GitHub perspective So maybe we can cover some of that a bit later. But yeah, effectively automation. And I love automation. So you'll probably see some of the passion start shining out as we come through here as well.
Given that description, should we think about using GitHub Actions versus using pipelines for different use cases? Or like, how do we take advantage of both?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one that I'm seeing come up a lot, to be honest. And, you know, I don't think right now there's a great reason to go one way or the other. I think if you're on Azure Pipelines already, there's no real reason to kind of move away at the moment. I think it's a great platform. If it was working for you, continue that investment as is. But for someone like me, where I am building my cloudwithchris.com website, everything I'm doing is open to the community. I want it to be a very open and inclusive kind of environment. So if someone actually spots an error on my website, go ahead and, you know, raise a pull request on GitHub. Go and make that change, go into production. I'll go and review it. And that's kind of the philosophy I'm trying to work by. So that's kind of the reason why I went for GitHub overall and then GitHub Actions as well, to really have that open community feeling. But I think the thing that I really love about GitHub Actions in particular, compared with something like Azure Pipelines or GitLab or some of the other offerings which are out there, is the fact that all of these GitHub Actions are actually behind the scenes just other GitHub repositories. So if you wanted to come along and say, right, you know, Evan or Cynthia or Sujit has this brilliant new action that I want to go and build because someone hasn't built it yet, that's okay. You just go ahead, follow the documentation to go and make a GitHub action, put it on GitHub, and then go and reference it as part of your workflow. And I think that approach is really cool, and it brings in that GitHub philosophy of open source and really that community aspect to it. I think when we start talking with enterprise customers, like some of us do here, obviously there's that nagging feeling in the back of my head about supply chain and should I trust some of those things that are out there. But I think you can say that with any kind of open source tooling, right? So I think that's why I like GitHub Actions in particular, because it's got so much potential there.
You know, I noticed you talked about the event model that GitHub Actions used. And, you know, I've been doing a little bit of GitHub Actions recently, and I found it difficult to get into because of that event-driven architecture that it has. You know, we're used to something that's more prescriptive. You know, here you kick off this particular script or something and it goes and does something for you. But this is kind of different, right? So maybe you can just explain our listeners why that's different or how that's different in the scope of GitHub Actions.
Yeah, so I guess if you're coming at it from a typical development perspective, it's not really so different. You know, you've still got when a new branch is created or, you know, a new commit is taken place on one of my branches, you still have that fuzzy feeling of continuous integration, continuous delivery, that, you know, what we're all used to. But you actually get even more access to some other event triggers as well. So, you know, again, we've probably all in the past done some kind of scheduled build. Maybe it's a nightly build or a nightly release or something like that, or a manual trigger as well. But GitHub Actions goes one step further, and the philosophy they're trying to go down is there's lots of different areas that people are going to be using GitHub. For example, GitHub issues. When I think about Cloud with Chris, the way that I manage all of my blogs, all of my episodes and my backlog is using GitHub issues. Again, that philosophy of I want to have it all out in the open. And if anyone wants to go ahead, suggest a new episode, go ahead, do it straight on my GitHub repository, and then I can go and prioritize it and you know, work on it that way. But there's comes a point where there's probably some repetitive tasks when you're doing those kind of issue triaging or maybe creating your project boards and all of these types of things, which are kind of like paper cut activities. Sometimes we think about them, death by a thousand paper cuts. And it's those types of things that actually GitHub Actions does really well, because you can now go ahead and, for example, hey, a new issue has been created, a new issue has been closed, someone commented on this issue. You can go ahead and use GitHub Actions, and it's just a workflow. It's just a pipeline of tasks effectively that you go and execute. So whether you want to go ahead, for example, and automatically comment when someone opens a new post and it's their first time, awesome. Whether, like I do, for example, I have a specific kind of title that I use for my GitHub issues, where it says like episode suggestion colon and then the episode title name. If that comes in, then I automatically add it to my project board. It gets added to the in progress, and then it, you know, it starts feeding some of my kind of workflow then that I use for my triaging and whatnot. And the even really super fun thing I mentioned earlier about I love automation, right? Is I've actually got a Logic app. This is really going into the end-to-end spectrum of automation here, but I got a Logic app where it syncs with my girlfriend's and my calendar. So as soon as I add something on there and it's got a time for it, it will make sure they're synced up so that she knows, oh, he's going to be recording at this point. I don't go near the office because he's recording, he's busy. So, you know, it's yeah, I love automation. So, yeah, let's not get me down that rabbit hole, I think.
I'm going to try that with my kids, but I don't know if that's going to work so well. So this sounds really cool, in terms of the ability to, you know, I coming from the world that I've come from, like, you know, event driven stuff is sort of a common thing, but is this, you know, am I looking at yet another language I gotta learn? You know, I'm sort of starting to dabble in YAML and whatnot, but like, what does it take to actually write one? You know, PowerShell, is it CLI? Is it?
Good question. You already mentioned the magic word YAML. GitHub Actions is all based in YAML. So, you know, slightly different schema, maybe compared to like an Azure pipeline. So I think GitLab actually uses YAML as well, or maybe JSON. I think CircleCI does as well. But what's interesting is when actually you start looking across all of those different technologies, they're all doing something very similar. Obviously, the implementation detail might be slightly different, but they're all starting to go down this pipelines as code or workflow as code path. And I think this is something interesting when you look across the industry and think of, you know, DevOps concepts more broadly, is we're really starting to see this focus on everything as code, whether it's policy, pipelines, infrastructure, your application. Data, right? You know, your data schemas or data scientists with their kind of models and calculations for the machine learning scripts. All of that we're starting to see go down this path. So, you know, it's still YAML. Schema might be slightly different, but actually the GitHub docs are really, really good in terms of laying out what the structure should be. And there's a nice editing experience as well in GitHub. If you go ahead, because there's a slight convention around how you create set up these GitHub actions. So any GitHub repository, you have a .github folder, a subfolder in that called workflows, and then you create your YAML file in there. If you do those magic steps, then what you unlock, it's a little bit like a level up, maybe we could put this in a gaming scenario, is this UI for editing your YAML then. What you can do is not quite drag and drop, but you can go and search the GitHub marketplace, for example. It'll go ahead, give you like a snippet of what the expectations are for that particular GitHub action. And then you can go ahead, copy and paste that in and go and tweak that in. So not foolproof, but definitely gives you some guardrails to start going down there.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes me feel good. Although I ran across an interesting article the other day that talked about XML and JSON and YAML. And personally, I thought it was a little bit of a stretch when they were trying to say how much better YAML was than JSON, because it's even less decorated than JSON. But yeah, no, I think as long as we're sitting within the YAML-esque world, I think that's an easy lift, right? Because you're right, YAML is showing up in a lot of different places. And even if you don't know, even if you don't know YAML itself, if you know JSON, it's not that much of a shift, right, between the two at that point.
Yeah. I wonder if we should start the debates between YAML versus JSON here. I think that's one for another day, right?
Yeah, that has some shades of philosophical debate. I don't think we need to go there.
Yeah. It's like some of those old programming languages, isn't it? Like spaces versus, there was one, wasn't there, which was literally just, it depends on the number of spaces that you put in the program, how it compile. I forget which it was now, but yeah.
I had this vague recollection of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, I'm curious, is there the idea of CI/CD for GitHub Actions? As in, like, when, because you just mentioned they're described with YAML and code. How do you validate your, quote, action before you use that action?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. And actually, I think it was Nat potentially on Twitter recently. He posted for, you know, what are the things that people are looking for in terms of GitHub coming up and feature updates and functionality. And I put a tweet out there, and it's one of those things when you do it and you start seeing your Twitter light up, you're like, okay, this is probably, you know, one of these things that actually people are liking here. And it was to do with effectively that. Being able to go ahead and have like a sandbox environment for your GitHub Action and developing it locally. There is actually something made by the community. I completely forget the name. I'll try and dig it out as we're talking here. But there is something third party which is out there where you can go and do this, you know, develop locally, sandbox it, test it out. And then once you've done your inner loop of development, go and use GitHub Actions to go and do what you need to do, right? But what my point was is it would be great to have something first party inside of GitHub that does that functionality. And a lot of people seem to agree with that, which was interesting. So whether it will come, I don't know. I'd love to see it. But, you know, there is something there third party if anyone in the community wants to go and use that. And again, third party dependencies, right? You've got to trust what you're depending on there. But there's also a nuanced point in what you were saying there as well. And the GitHub Actions themselves, the way that you make them, there's two ways that you actually make the individual tasks or the individual actions themselves. One is either a Docker image, and the other way is using like JavaScript or a derivation of a JavaScript, so like a TypeScript or something like that, for example. And because it's either of those options, then it would be the same kind of analogy for any CI/CD process. You know, you're going to have your unit tests to validate all of your inputs, etc., and use that kind of approach. And the way that I always try to position any of these kind of DevOps agents, tooling kind of frameworks is that effectively it's just dumb software. You know, it's just dumb software which is replacing me as an end user, you know, the dumb human behind the behind the keyboard in front of the chair that could go ahead and enter something wrong on the keyboard, if that makes sense. So effectively, what are the set of commands and the tasks that I want to go and run? Have some unit tests to go and make sure that actually your guardrails are there in terms of, you know, I've got any rogue values or these types of things, and you're not going to launch anything nasty there in terms of the command line. And once you've got those checks and balances in, you're probably in a good place to go and publish that out and get going there. The interesting thing with GitHub Actions, just to kind of wrap that piece up there as well, is I mentioned earlier that they're all based on repositories. So if I go and have a GitHub Actions workflow, which is like my pipeline, what I do in there is I have a set of steps, and you have this user statement. And then when you have this user statement, you reference the Git repository. So like Azure/login, for example, is the login step to log into your Azure subscription. But then after that, you have an at and then a version. And the interesting thing about it is, again, it just uses these repository kind of concepts. So you have repository tags from a Git perspective. So if I've got a V1 or a V2 or a V3, that is just a pointer to a commit in my repository. So that's how you can really easily then version those GitHub Actions as well and pin to a specific action in your workflow. So again, I just, as you could tell probably by the excitement of what I'm saying, it's just a really elegant way of doing it, I think, and a nice approach of wrapping it all together there.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is very similar to what Cynthia was suggesting. I had wrote a GitHub Action to take a ASP.NET API, mm-hmm. and it runs some unit tests, and then it publishes it to Azure, to an app service, right, as part of a release. When I cut a release. And I think when I first did it, because I, you know, I was doing coding it in Visual Studio Code in a branch, and I submitted the branch in, I checked it in. I think I had to do like 20 commits before I got it right, because I could only test it on the server, right? I would submit the YAML, and then I would wait for the thing to run and look at the log, and then it would fail, and then you try something else, look up, you do a search online for solutions, things like that. I think that's exactly what I was looking for. What Cynthia mentioned is there's got to be a better way you could test these things offline, make sure that your YAML's good before you check it in, right? Otherwise, you're checking in code which you kind of almost expect to fail. You know, that's the problem. So I think you've kind of answered my question, but I just wanted to give you my perspective on that as well.
Oh, it's good. And you gave me enough time just to go and look in the background there, that third party that I mentioned there. So it's github.com/Nektos, and that's Nektos with a K, so NEKTOS/ACT. And this is like the this third party local task runner that I mentioned there, and replicating something like that in GitHub, I think, would be awesome. So yeah, that's the project I was referencing there. So that might be one to check out if you haven't seen it already.
We've all gotten spoiled with IDEs, right? And as some of these things are switching back to declarative languages, I think the IDEs and the design time experience has to catch up with it, mm-hmm. right? Declarative languages are great because it is, you know, whatever as code, but now you still got to run it somewhere, right? So that's a great solution for that. Well, no, this has been great, Chris. Anything else, you know, that maybe we didn't hit on for GitHub Actions that you want to make sure the audience hears about?
Yeah, I guess with GitHub Actions, I know we've been focusing a lot on actions that maybe other people have published as well, but just like in Azure DevOps with Azure Pipelines, for example, you still have the capability of running scripts as well. So if you can write it as a script, you can go and execute it again as well. So I think even if the action doesn't exist and you're kind of looking around going, oh, I don't know about writing something there, that isn't for me, maybe I'll just step back. Actually, if you've got those Bash or PowerShell scripts already and you just want to repurpose them, go ahead and do that as well. It's same kind of concept, just run the script and go ahead and do that. But I think given the audience and given your podcast as well, definitely worth calling out that there are a number of samples out there already. Actually, there's a team in Azure Engineering that focus on building GitHub Actions, not just the individual actions, but also example workflows as well. We were working with them when I was in Fast Track, actually, to go and expand some of the examples that are in there. And I know that's a community that they're really looking to drive and build. So I think it's github.com/Azure/actions, nice and easy to remember. So go ahead and definitely check that out.
For GitHub Action, is there the idea of choosing what agent you're using? Or does it just intelligently find out? Because for like Azure Pipelines, yes, you choose like if you want a Ubuntu or you want, I think, a Windows server in the underlying agent.
Gotcha, I'm with you. So in the YAML file, you specify, I think, I can't remember if it was users now, or might be with the keyword, but you specify the type of agent that you want in there. But I guess what you're alluding to is like the demands versus capabilities idea. And I haven't seen that pop up in GitHub. It might just be I haven't stumbled upon it myself, to be honest. But I'm intrigued, so I'll have to do some digging after this and take a look. But the way I've typically done it is I've just targeted a specific platform and gone, okay, you know, I'm going to go and run this on Linux. The interesting thing, though, maybe to actually touch on that point and something you mentioned earlier, let's think of the scenario I'm building some open source software and, you know, maybe I'm building some kind of command line tool like the Azure CLI, let's say, and I need to go ahead, build it on Mac, build it on Windows, build it on Linux and test it on all of those different platforms. One of the cool things you can do with GitHub Actions is there's this concept of a matrix. So then you can inject from this matrix, like, you know, I want to use Windows, I want to use Ubuntu, I want to use Mac, I need to use these versions of Node, so version A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Go ahead and run this same process on all of these different combinations and then let me know the results of that. And it's that kind of thing.
I think we lost Chris.
Oh, no, he's good, Evan.
Oh, it was my side. Ah, lovely. You two were moving. He wasn't.
Ah. I was just frozen in awe of GitHub Actions.
In Matrix. That's where he was.
Yeah, exactly. I was in the Matrix. There we go. We'll have to do that double take now. We'll have to try and edit in like the same thing happening over and over again. But yeah, I think the Matrix capabilities as well is really powerful, again, to not quite address that point, but just as a parallel to that point, I think is, again, where that, I'm sure the keyword is with, but anyway, where you specify which OS you want to go and use and even version numbers or whatnot as well. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And one thing probably worth mentioning, Chris, is that, you know, all this these actions, they're actually compute minutes in the background, right? They're consuming some resources. So there's not like an endless amount of that for free available. Yep. At least there's a certain amount for free you get, but was it 1,500 minutes? So I figured what the exact number is.
1,500 or 1,800, I think, for a private repository. And then if you're a public open source repository, of course, GitHub loves open source. So you know, you get more love. But of course, if you need more than that, it's not a case of, sorry, you can't use any more. You can go ahead and then, of course, pay for more. Yep. It's interesting because the way that I use GitHub Actions on Cloud with Chris, I don't just use it for code. I also use it for my podcast files, my MP3 files. So my podcast, my MP3 files, my site all live in Azure Storage, all have CDN in front of it. So all the things you'd kind of expect to see. But what I found, because I've got YouTube and I've got all these different platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, blah, 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 I found that I just couldn't keep up to date with what I had to push where, what I had to do. So coming back to that point about, you know, how can you use GitHub Actions? I have my MP3 files in Git large file storage. It's like an extension for Git. So a pointer elsewhere, effectively, rather than storing it directly in Git. And then I just have a GitHub action to filter on, hey, have you uploaded any MP3 files or push them to the repo? Cool. Yes, we see some changes. Go ahead, push that out to the storage account then to go and be released to your users. So again, it's just part of my release process now from a Git perspective, which honestly, it sounds so simple, but it's made the world of difference with my release process and consistency. So automation.
I think that's going to make a big, we should look at that as well. Right now, Cynthia and I are the ones who are the automation engines doing all of this stuff.
Gotcha.
And so it'll be nice to take some of that stuff and truly automate it, right, Cynthia?
all hands to the pump. There you go.
and I will readily confess, if both of them up and, you know, if they win the lottery and say they never want to do the podcast again, myself and the rest of the hosts, we're in so much trouble. We're in so much trouble at that point. So yes, I would definitely support that as well.
There we go. So, you've got a proof of concept there. You know it works.
absolutely. This was great. Chris, thanks for coming on. I feel bad that we didn't run into each other while we were on the same team. And by the way, before the audience forgets, this is sort of the larger team of the customer experience team, which are, I think we're like 700 people globally. It's not like there was this little team of 20. I just never talked, but I appreciate you coming on and, you know, looking forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me again. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, folks. Catch everybody next week.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.